Crystal Lampitt is a mental health therapist and trauma specialist. The first part of this audio is from her video presentation, The Myth of Self-Sabotage, for the Trauma Super Conference. The second audio is from her TED Talk, Sad, Sick, and Stuck, Rethinking Mental Health. Follow links in the show notes for more.
We look at the ACEs, which is the Adverse Childhood Experience, a study done in the 90s. It's a 10-question questionnaire, and the questions are all about, were you abused? Were you neglected? Were you hit? Were you molested? All of these things. Did these things happen to you under the age of 18? And the higher the ACE score, the more likely you are to have health problems, to have mental health issues, and to have a lot of problems getting through life and functioning. So what's interesting here, though, is you can have an ACE score of zero, but if you have a history of being misattuned to, or you live in an environment where you haven't felt safe because you perhaps are a part of a marginalized group, or because of microaggressions that have been committed towards you that you've internalized and haven't even noticed. I mean, there are any number of ways that we can learn to adapt to really problematic, traumatizing conditions. When I was in my mid-20s, life appeared to be going pretty well. I was working at my dream job as a TV host at a local station, and I had just bought my first home. So I was really settling in and, you know, just feeling like life was on track. I was getting to put down some roots near family and friends. So you can imagine my surprise when one morning I woke up and I went to the sink to brush my teeth, and the first thing I noticed was a huge bald patch on the side of my head. And when I say bald patch, I mean there was not a single strand of hair on this patch of skin that was about the size of a golf ball. So next thing, I'm on the phone with my mom, asking her, what is going on? What do I do? Is this normal? And she told me I should probably go get it checked out. So I did. I went to the doctor and I was diagnosed with a condition called alopecia areata and two other autoimmune illnesses. And with autoimmune disease, essentially what happens is your immune system attacks your body's own healthy cells. And in my case, my hair follicles, my skin cells, and my mucous membranes would all be affected. And I remember my doctors really trying to reassure me, you know, that this wasn't that bad, the symptoms were very manageable, but there was no cure. And once you have one autoimmune illness, you're likely to get some of the others. And there are between 70 to 80 of them, everything from lupus to rheumatoid arthritis. And I basically was just supposed to accept that this was my life now. And I remember thinking, absolutely not. This is not what my 20s were supposed to look like. I was supposed to be out having fun and dating, not going to the doctor's office and having steroid injections into my scalp, hoping that my hair would grow back. And I was really afraid. You know, I worried, what if I did get sicker? What if I lost my job, lost my house, lost my hair, maybe my sanity? So I really had to get past this initial shock. And when I did, I kind of realized, you know what, I had been ignoring a lot of symptoms for a long time. So years prior to this, I had had chronic fatigue, sleep issues, digestive issues, panic episodes, and these periods of anxiety and depression. But I really thought these were just kind of normal stress responses to a very demanding career. So I tried everything to fix my situation. I took all the medications my doctors prescribed. I went to a number of medical specialists and holistic practitioners, tried every diet and lifestyle change in the book, and honestly, nothing really got better. Maybe a minor improvement, you know, here and there, but nothing sustainable. And what was becoming clear, though, was that my mental health was suffering profoundly. So several years into this and several thousands of dollars, I just decided, you know what, maybe I need to stop seeing medical specialists and start seeing a therapist. And this wasn't something I had really considered before, because I was still functioning, you know, I was still going to work every day. And I think there was a bit of a stigma attached to it. But I did finally go and see a therapist, and I didn't realize this at the time, but this would be the catalyst for me to completely switch gears, go back to grad school at age 30 to pursue a career in mental health. And that's what I do now. So I get to work with my own therapy clients and support them through some of their challenges. So you see, an interesting thing happened when I went to a therapist and really started to focus on my mental health. Both my psychological symptoms and some of my physical symptoms began to improve. And I'll just say here, no, I did not cure my autoimmune illness. I still have them, but I don't have flare-ups the way that I used to. My hair doesn't fall out in chunks anymore, thankfully. Now it just sheds because I'm getting older, but I don't have such severe flare-ups. And, you know, more importantly, the way that I relate to myself and relate to these diagnoses, that has completely shifted, and that's really improved my quality of life. So I'd like to share what I've learned with you. And, you know, health and mental health, these are such complex topics, but this is one perspective that has been really helpful for me. So when I first started researching all of this, I consistently found there was a huge link between mental health conditions and chronic illness, especially stress and trauma-related disorders and autoimmune illness. And, you know, I always thought, well, I don't have trauma because, again, I was still functioning and I was kind of in denial, honestly. So the word trauma didn't really resonate with me until I came across the work of Dr. Francine Shapiro. And she describes trauma as existing in a couple of categories. So there are the capital T traumas, which are the things we might think of, like war, natural disaster, assault. And then there are the little T traumas, which are no less significant, but they might be less visible. And these can be things like early life experiences or life transitions that were overwhelming for us. And we can think of the big T traumas as a huge wound on our bodies. And the little T traumas are like lots of little cuts. You can bleed out from both. So once again, once I got past my initial denial, I realized, you know what? Yeah, I had experienced both big T and little T traumas, but they were kind of scary to look at. So for years, I just told myself I was fine and I ignored all of my symptoms and feelings. But when I started to learn about the physiology behind my responses, I felt a lot less crazy because I realized, you know what? It's not about crazy. It's about survival. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's work really helped me to understand this. So he defines trauma as anything that overwhelms our nervous system. So it's less about the event and more about the way our nervous system responds to an event. And our nervous system's functioning is, of course, influenced by things like our biology, our environments, and any trauma and stress. But whether you identify as having trauma, you definitely have a nervous system. So I think understanding the way that it works can really help us with our mental health. And most of us already know the basics here, right? That we have a fight or flight response to stress and threats. But there's a third response that we don't always talk about, and that's the freeze response. And the freeze response happens when our nervous system decides fight or flight are not the best option here, and immobility is. So we see this in the animal kingdom where some animals will play dead to deter a predator. I see this a lot now in my work with sexual assault survivors who, you know, they blame themselves for not running away from their attacker when what's actually happening is the nervous system has decided within milliseconds that the best way to survive this threat is to completely freeze up. And your muscles actually do lock up. It's called tonic immobility. And you might also completely dissociate from that painful experience. And Dr. Stephen Porges is a neuroscientist, and he says that getting stuck in the freeze response can look a lot like dissociation, depression, and a general sense of hopelessness. And another piece to all of this is that whenever we're experiencing chronic stress or trauma, our limbic system is activating that fight, flight, freeze response, and our logic system goes offline. So those thinking parts of the brain, like the prefrontal cortex, aren't even fully available. So this is why it's really hard when you're in like a really heated argument with your spouse to come up with a rational solution to a problem. And when we're constantly in fight, flight, freeze, our body gets worn out and our thinking processes are affected. So there's a very real physiological component to psychological health. Ultimately, we're wired for survival, and our symptoms and behaviors often make sense in the context of trying to meet those survival needs. Even our most stubborn behavioral patterns, things like addiction, perfectionism, codependency, these can be survival strategies that we're using to either get our basic needs met or to cope with our needs not being met. But we don't usually think of it like this, right? We think, well, something must be wrong with me. I'm weak. I'm lazy. And it kind of makes sense because we live in a society that reinforces this message that we need to hustle hard to be worthy and never ask for help. And so we really normalize our actual human needs not being met, and then we tell ourselves we just need to toughen up and try harder. So what do we do instead here? We have to start listening to the wisdom in our bodies and get curious about our needs, starting with one of our most basic needs, which is safety. And not just physical safety, but a nervous system that feels safe. And Dr. Porges says that safety is a prerequisite to meeting a lot of our other survival needs, like connection, because without safety, we're not going to get closer to other people, and we're definitely not going to meet our higher functioning needs, like joy and creativity. But what's amazing here is when we create safety, we can support the ideal environment that's going to encourage recovery and change to occur naturally. And change really can occur on a neurological level. So neuroplasticity means that our brain can create new neural pathways and learn to function and respond in different ways. So let's say, what if our basic physical safety needs are met, but we still feel unsafe in our own bodies? And this was a really tough one for me. It took me years to go from my body is betraying me to my body is protecting me. I really had to learn about my nervous system and kind of befriend my own body before it started to feel safer for me. And so I like to think of a dysregulated nervous system as a kind of chaotic house. And if you ever watch the Netflix show Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, you kind of already know what I'm talking about here. But if you've never heard of her, Marie Kondo is a decluttering guru. And she helps these really stressed out families reorganize their homes and reclaim a sense of peace. And this is a pretty big task because you'll see in these homes, you know, families who are, they're not getting along. There's stuff everywhere. One person might have a hoarding problem and they're just not functioning well because the stuff in their homes has become overwhelming. And when Marie comes into the home, the first thing she does is kind of unexpected. So she'll gather up the whole family with all their disgruntled feelings and she'll ask them to sit in the living room. And she'll usually kneel on the floor and put her hands on the floor. And she'll ask everyone to close their eyes. And she'll say, "I want you to thank your home for keeping your family safe." And this moment, this recognition of the home as a supportive structure, often brings people to tears because they've simply never seen their homes as a haven. They've seen it as a source of stress and shame. And I think this is how many of us feel about our own bodies. But with Marie, you know, instead of shaming these families for having so much stuff, she simply invites them to look at all of it, to acknowledge all of it, the painful memories, the items that need repairing that have been neglected, the messy parts that aren't helping. And every item in the house gets addressed. So she'll tell them to pick an item up, hold it, and feel whether it sparks joy or not. And if it doesn't, she'll tell them to thank the item, then repurpose it or let it go. And as the house becomes reorganized and repaired, the whole family starts functioning differently. There's better communication, there's more compassion, and there's really more safety in the home, both emotionally and structurally. And this is so cool to watch, you know, and of course, if you're watching it on Netflix, you get to see it all happen in 45 minutes. But in real life, this is not such a quick process because it really requires us to slow down and look at our stuff. And when we look inward, we might find trauma that needs processing. We might find that we're living with stressors that are really activating that survival response. But when we can start to honor our pain and start seeing our bad habits as survival strategies, we can start to listen to what our body is telling us. And it will often speak to us in emotions. Every emotion has an intention to communicate a need or to protest a need not being met. And when we ignore the emotion, we also ignore the possibility of meeting our own needs. Sometimes our bodies will speak to us in symptoms, in discomfort and pain that force us to pay attention. But we're so quick to think of symptoms automatically as being a sign of pathology when sometimes they're just a sign of our humanity. And we think there's something horribly wrong with us when the fact that we are currently alive is a sign that there's something very right with us. Our nervous system is doing its job. So instead of making our mental health about our perceived deficits and character flaws, sometimes we should really be asking ourselves, what do I need to feel safer right now? And there are so many ways to create internal safety, whether that's practicing healthy boundaries and protecting your environment, or mindfulness and deep breathing exercises that really counteract the shallow breathing of the fight, flight, freeze response. It's different for everyone. But we first have to learn to stop bypassing ourselves and instead ask ourselves, what needs are not getting met? And how can we choose to organize and protect our homes? If there's one thing you can take away from this, I hope it's this: to ask yourself over and over again, what does your body need? And then to listen until you start to feel more at home in your own body. With practice and support, you can learn to reorganize your home, appreciate the safety it has provided for you, and find the joy you didn't think you could have. Thank you.